you know who's going to be your first guest?
I might just do it in the order we're doing them. I might just do it the order we're filming them.
Oh,
Melanie,
okay.
Sam,
okay.
then Brian. Yeah.
We'll do it. We'll.
Well, because these two are insurance related and the other one's investments.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just kind of an introduction.
We'll record an introduction later.
We'll do an introduction and the promos as well.
We'll do that later.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do that later.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. All right. We are.
Actually, I might start with the COVID claims, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Ready to roll.
Ready to roll. With me now is Sam Trementhick from AIA. Sam's in charge of the partnerships the company works with. It's great to have you in here. How's things? How have you enjoyed lockdown?
Yeah, look, it's been an interesting time, but hopefully we're coming through it and hopefully we'll see an announcement shortly to move us to level one.
Yeah. So tell me, at AIA, what has your claims experience been around COVID?
Yeah, look, good question. Look, we've had a number of redundancy claims come through as a result. Whilst it's not significant, it's not insignificant, and obviously that's just a reflection of the economy. The other interesting thing is, look, we've dealt with two death claims as a direct result of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And look, whilst it's a tragic circumstance, it's really, you know, humbling to be there for families at need. I think, you know, interestingly though, if we've got 30% market share and we just do the numbers, that may be six of the 22 victims that have been insured. So essentially,
so is that low? Yeah.
Well, essentially 75% of victims haven't had cover. Now, some of it you could argue might be product design, but I think, you know, what we really need to call out is there's a massive underinsurance problem still here in New Zealand.
So is that something advisors should talk to clients about and use it as an example?
Oh, look, I'd be fearful of using it as an example, but I think it's just highlights the need and the underinsurance here in New Zealand.
Yes.
So I think, you know, there's plenty of opportunity. We are living in the classic VUCA world of volatility and uncertainty. So, you know, the need for insurance is ever present.
And redundancy claims, has that been a big number or?
Yeah, look, I don't have the number off the top of my head, but there has been a number that have come through.
Mm.
But that's, you know, that's reflective of the environment in which we're operating in.
But it's showing the products are working.
Well, that's why they're
there. Yeah.
And that's really pleasing. And look, you know, for us, making sure that we've been able to keep our products open through the whole program or the whole event has been really, you know, important for us. So we've kept our redundancy cover available for new clients, albeit we've made it incredibly explicit, the need for a 6-month waiting period, et cetera. But I think, you know, as an insurer, you can't just be there for the good times.
No, that's exactly right. And you've just this week rolled out some extra support for advisors. Can you talk me through that?
Yeah, look, more than happy to. We went out to our advisors and look, again, reflective of the economy, 65% of them said their biggest issue was cash flow. I think they've done an amazing job retaining support staff and supporting clients through this time. But we really wanted to address that main problem, which was cash flow. So we've introduced from this week a small business support payment. So that's an additional commission payment to the tune of 40% on new business that comes through via EAP. Now, that's really important for us in the sense of, does it go all the way to make up for the shortfalls and lossing revenue? No, but it supports those businesses.
So it's also, I guess, a bit of a drive for you to get the EAP used more?
Oh, look, without a doubt, but, you know, never make light of a crisis. The crisis, you know, really drove up take up, and we're sitting at about 80% usage.
So cash flow was a big issue for advisors. I'm sort of surprised because I would have thought a lot of them had good trail books.
Yeah, look, trail is definitely part of their income stream. And look, you know, advisors are advisors and you know, obviously they've got different business models. And look, some that are well-placed and established in the marketplace would have a good trail book. Some that have just started out don't. And those that, you know, may have entered into various partnerships where they share trail commission with referral partners or whatnot, you know, are also struggling. So, look, I think, you know, as a generalisation, everyone is doing it tough from a new business perspective and also from a cash flow perspective.
And so this is AIA's way of helping out at the moment?
Yeah, look, it was a, you know, we were trying to get the balance of speed to market and something that we could implement quickly, but also just, you know, aligning to that point of underinsurance. Mm. There is more than enough opportunity out there, and whilst things are different and the world's different, the need for insurance is ever present.
Yeah. So what are you seeing in terms of, you know, new business now?
Yeah, look, we're returning to where we were pre-COVID.
So how big was the drop?
In the advisor market, it was, look, circa around 30%.
Yeah.
And look, you know, it was interesting. There were some advisors and you know, you can speak to them directly. Some would have really suffered significantly. Mm. Others, and whether it was mindset, attitude, or just the way that they'd structured their business, actually outperformed during that time.
So lessons advisors can take out of this COVID experience?
Look, there's a multitude, isn't there?
Yeah.
Look, I think those advisors that have been successful, and this is nothing new, this is not a result of COVID, but I think those that have done really well through this process have a clear value proposition to their clients and have a clear client-first mentality. Mm. Now, those that have had that relationship with their clients have been able to nurse them through their situation. Mm. They've understood their financial needs and been there for them. Those that have been more transactional have probably been more heavily hit.
Yeah, so that's one of the things which I think this whole experience has done, is actually focused people on what their value proposition is.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's that is, if you look at any other industry, it's a key for a successful business, is knowing what you are, knowing what you provide, and ultimately know who you're providing it to.
And we've learned a lot about technology during COVID. I mean, I bet you've done a lot of Zoom meetings.
Yeah, I'm almost over Zoom meetings.
Yeah, I am.
But, you know, it's, you know, multiple faces on squares and talking over each other. But look, you know, it's amazing how we adapted.
Mm.
And, you know, from an AIA experience, and look, you know, all large businesses had to go through this, but it was sort of within 2 days we'd moved 1,100 people out of our office building, working remotely. And whilst it wasn't perfect, I must admit it was pretty amazing that, you know, technology enabled us to do that.
Oh, I've been fascinated with these big organisations and what they actually achieved during that time. And, you know, you've got CEOs working from home and stuff like this. It's been...
Yeah, and look, you know, there's positives and negatives to it, but it's also tremendously humbling in the sense that you get an insight into people's lives, and whether it's my 2-year-old daughter listening to Frozen in the background, or you know, someone's cat walking across the screen, it's a really different way of working.
So, do you think that will continue?
Oh, look, I'd hate to be the predictor of this. I don't think we'll go back to how we were, and I think for me, if I speak for myself personally, you know, I think, you know, I've learnt that working from home can be as efficient, if not more efficient. So if I think of commuting to the office there and back and what I would do in the office, maybe I'm better suited doing some more time at home.
Yeah.
So look, I think it's going to be horses for courses, but I don't think we'll go back to what we were.
Yeah. And other predictions for the future of advice? What have you got there?
Predictions for the future of advice? Oh, look, I think... So what has this told us? I think it's told us the importance of being relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from a product manufacturing perspective, that challenge is on us.
Mm.
Making sure, when I talk about the underinsurance challenge that we have here, I think we've also, you know, created that problem in the sense that our products are very feature-rich and very expensive. Mm. So how do we make sure that we're able to offer products to a broader part of the community?
So we might sort of see product change come out of this?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not to say it's with, you know, taking on less risk. I think it's just adapting to people's needs and people's wants.
Yeah. And the other thing, and I saw you in a video during lockdown, and one of the many videos I've watched, dealer groups, how do you expect them to evolve after this? And I guess I'm really interested in, you know, one of your competitors is gone down the track of paying the overrides to the FAPs. Is that the sort of way you guys would go?
Oh, look, you know, I have a personal bias. I believe that dealer groups are good. I think they provide a really rich service to the advisor. And now there's arguments to go and do it yourself, and, you know, there's a lot of reasons to do that. And if you're that way inclined, then you should. But it's also a lot of admin, and it's also a lot of compliance that you actually are responsible for, on top of just the standard advice compliance. If that's not your skill set, are you actually better to outsource that to a dealer group type relationship? And you know, I think it'll evolve and it will mature, but I think there's some really strong dealer group offerings in the marketplace. I think there's a really important thing which is probably underestimated, and that's the collegiate nature of a dealer group. Advising's a lonely business. And so that ability to meet up with your peers on a regular basis and, you know, to professional development days, continuous education, getting access to speakers that you couldn't actually afford by yourself, but your dealer group, through their bargaining power, can actually bring in, you know, I think that's really powerful. So, you know, I think, you know, each to their own decision, and there's pluses and minuses in any decision. But I think, you know, there is definitely a strong place for dealer groups going forward here in the New Zealand market.
Look, it's going to be fascinating to see how the industry evolves post-COVID, and we'll be watching closely. Look, thanks very much for your time, Sam. It's been great to have you in the studio.
Absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Cheers. Thanks. Did we cover everything off?
Yeah, I'm happy. You
nothing
happy?
Else you want to put on there? Oh, we did it perfectly. So you might.
All good. Actually, the only thing I was thinking about from your point of view is completely just personal interest. Call centres. Do you have call centres? And are they still... Because a lot of them were operating at home.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely operating at home. They're the only ones so far that we've actually brought back into the office.
Oh, really?
So we've only got... Well, last week we had 50 people in the office, and this week we've got...